Welcome to Whatever Works, our unique fortnightly podcast in which we talk about whatever works in our lives and in the lives of our community members. Find us at whateverworks.works. And why not join our community? Simply search for Whatever Works at MeWe.com and get stuck in.
Audacity and Zoom on the go.
Zoom and audition on the go. Should we start properly today? Should we say Happy Easter and...
No.
Well, let's just say hello then. Hello, everybody.
We'll say happy bank holiday, everyone.
Yes, indeed.
Happy long weekend, everyone.
Oh, dear. Do you know what? I was just saying to you off air, though, Ted, isn't it weird that Christmas we make such a big deal about, both here and in the States? It's the day of days, and yet Easter just sort of creeps by, barely noted. I mean, I actually forgot yesterday. I think I said to my mother something about what is open or closed or what's happening. She said, oh, it's Easter. I said, oh, yes, it is. I'd forgotten all about it. It sort of sneaks by, doesn't it?
We'll come to that more nitty-gritty on that one in Room 101 later. But yes, I think...
If you put Easter into Room 101...
What I'm putting into Room 101, you'll find out later, dear listener. But it's related to bank holiday weekends.
I've interrupted your housekeeping, sir. I'm sorry. I'll shut up at the back.
Whateverworks.works. That's our website. Hello, everyone. Welcome to show 204. It's the 1st of April today, but we're no fools. And whateverworks.works is our website. We shall talk about all sorts of crap on the show today. And if you don't want to, I mean, if you do want to look up any links to what we're talking about, then whateverworks.works is where you'll find them, as you will in your podcatcher, which nearly everyone in the world uses. And if you don't, there is an RSS feed, which you'll find there as well. Whatever Works is our MeWe group as well. And we would like you to tell us whatever works in your life by popping in there, joining up, and spilling the beans. AidanBell.com is where you'll find Aidan. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me and all the stuff I do and he does, etc. Right, there's your housekeeping. What do you want to talk about?
Well, hello, everybody. Here, listen, I found this. I read this interesting thing online the other day. I thought I'd bring this to the show because this sort of, I don't know, it somehow speaks nicely to the ethos of whatever works. What do you think of this? The US standard railroad gauge, that's the distance between the rails, is 4 feet, 8.5 inches. I'm glad you asked. Thank you. It's which is an odd number, it says here. Why was that gauge used? Well, because that's the way that they built them in England. And it was English engineers who designed the first US railroads. And why did the English build them like that? Because the first rail lines were built by the same people who built the wagon tramways, and that's the gauge they used. So, why did they use that gauge? Well, because the people who built the tramways used the same jigs and tools that had been used for building wagons, which used the same wheel spacing. Why did the wagons have that particular odd spacing? Well, if they tried to use any other spacing, the wheels would break more often on some of the old long-distance roads in England. So who built those roads? Well, are you keeping up at the back, by the way? There's a point to all this.
I hope it's coming soon.
So who built those roads? Well, Imperial Rome built the first long-distance roads in Europe, including in England.
Of course they did.
For their legions. It was the Romans, wasn't it? What have the Romans ever done for us? And those roads have been used ever since. As for the ruts in the roads, the Roman war chariots formed the initial ruts, which everyone else had to match, or else run the risk of destroying their wagon wheels. Since the chariots were made for Imperial Rome, they were all alike in the manner of wheel spacing. Therefore, the United States standard railroad gauge of 4 feet and 8.5 inches is in fact derived from the original specifications for an Imperial Roman war chariot. Bureaucracies live forever, it says. The reason for this exact particular size? Well, Imperial Roman army chariots were made just wide enough to accommodate the rear end of 2 war horses. Now, here's where it gets even more surreal, and don't worry, I'm nearly at the end. When you see a space shuttle sitting on its launch pad in the States, there are 2 big booster rockets attached to the sides of the main fuel tank. These are solid rocket boosters, which are made by Thiokol at their factory in Utah. The engineers who designed them would have preferred to have made them a bit fatter, but they had to be shipped by rail from the factory in Utah to the launch site in Houston. So, here it comes, a major space shuttle design feature of what is arguably the world's most advanced transportation system was determined over 2,000 years ago by the width of a horse's arse. There's my Easter thought for the day.
Very nice, yes. I was reading something kind of related to this during the week about why we drive on the left and not on the right, and the origins of that, and it goes back to the fact that in England warriors in the past had to have their swords on the left, and so when they put their arm across their body, they pulled the sword out from the left, and then their enemies were coming at them from the right.
Yes.
And so, yeah, but then everyone changed it. I can't remember the details of why everyone else apart from us changed it now.
But it's anyway, the same again, as a consequence of which Elon Musk is now designing his electric cars with the wheel on a certain side of the road. I mean, it's a butterfly effect, isn't it? Something that you wouldn't, you know, the size of a horse's arse 2,000 years ago determines the size of the... of parts of the space shuttle.
Indeed.
The mind boggles, that's all.
Indeed. Well, I'm glad that you got that out of your system. And hopefully anyone that's fast-forwarded it can fast-forwarded it.
How dare you, sir?
Can now pause and play again.
How dare you.
Very interesting stuff. Very interesting indeed. So anything else going on with you?
No. I'm just dredging up boring... boring material from the internet to bore you all to sleep with. No, do carry on.
Well, same here, really. Life ticks on. I get fed up with being miserable about my health, so I won't talk about that. The coastal infiltrators are here. So as soon as we've got this long bank holiday weekend, it seems like that is where North Wales get hit by all the people from Manchester and Liverpool. And... you can't move here. I'll come to that later again. But consequently, the clocks have changed. The evenings are lighter, which makes it hotter. And no, I won't start moaning about climate. No, the climate's lovely. It's I won't be getting my air conditioner out anytime soon and whinging about how hot it is. No, I won't.
I'd forgotten I'm co-hosting a show with a polar bear, aren't I? Let's move on, sir.
Right, Chris Kelly, feedback from the last show. Regarding Ted's battery-powered tyre inflator that I recommended, has happily been bounced around in the box of my bike for months on end and has retained its charge. So don't worry, he says. However, you are quite correct. It's best practice to check it from time to time.
Yes, I was. Thank you, Chris. And Chris goes on to say, actually, regarding the chocolate-covered coffee beans that I brought onto the show. He says, Aidan, I'm with Aidan, he says. They are delicious. Thank you, Chris. I've not had any for quite some time, but having been reminded of them, I will seek some out. Yes, they're very Moorish. I have that. When the thought goes into my brain, I have to have some. Dark chocolate, says Chris, has beneficial properties in moderation. I imagine that the fibre in the coffee beans will help offset the carb content for those watching that, and therefore make them better than the chocolate alone. Well, there we are. So Chris is with me on the chocolate-covered coffee beans.
I really fancy the milk ones. Since you told me about the fact that there were milk chocolate ones, I've fancied trying those because I just don't like dark chocolate. And so if I could get some of those, I'd be all right. But also, I need some teeth to crunch it with.
What we must tell our dear listener is that you, having been a heathen on the last show and saying, never heard of them, what are those? I have never had some. I sent you some in the post, didn't I, which you've tried. So,
oh, is that since the last show?
I think it is, yeah. So having tried them, you've determined that you would prefer them in milk chocolate, you troglodyte.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I just don't like dark chocolate. I find it bitter and unpleasant, whereas milk chocolate is really nice. Now, I can't eat chocolate at all at the moment, as you know. And I won't go into that, but if I was going to eat it, then milk would be just so much nicer for me personally. Right. The thing I was going to ask you was, though, those ones you sent me, could you actually chuck those in the hopper of the coffee machine? And would it kind of crunch them up and process it?
Your instant cappuccino.
Yeah, exactly.
I really don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to ruin my coffee machine by trying, but it's an interest. I mean, you can't put all that chocolate through the thing. But even if you were to remove the chocolate meticulously from every coffee bean, I should imagine they're pretty old coffee beans. I don't really know, sir. It's an interesting point.
No, but you could create instant mocha, isn't it? Chocolate and coffee.
Yes, you could.
And I did wonder, but you're probably right. I think it'll probably knacker the grinding thing.
You'd probably make only one, and then that would be it.
Yeah, you probably knacker the grinding bits inside that hopper, wouldn't you?
Indeed, yes. Perhaps not worth
it. I got my Marshall speaker, the Action 3.
Yes.
I waited long enough for Santa to bring it for me. I won't bang on it about it too much because I did it in Tech Addicts yesterday. But it was a lovely bit of kit, and you would love it too because it's got knobs and dials and buttons over it.
Yes, yes.
I'm using it now madly as my main PC speaker. It is stereo, but you can't really tell. I don't know why they made it stereo, really. You need to put your head right in front of it to get the stereo effect. They should have just left it as mono, I think. Anyway, that's not really the point of this. It is Bluetooth, as well as having a 3.5mm auxiliary input, which I'm using for my computer, as I mentioned. There's no smart stuff on it. It runs by mains electricity and not by battery. So when other people have to send their battery-driven devices back for getting a new battery, I'll still be going. Well, as long as the electricity's not cut, I suppose. And sometimes it's just nice to have some mains-powered things again. And even though, yes, you do run the risk of having a power cut, and also, you're tied to it. You can't carry it with you and take it somewhere. Fair enough. But I just think it's lovely, and I'm really pleased I bought it. I got it on a 5 months-to-pay deal at Amazon, and I waited long enough for this, and I've got it now, and I'm very, very happy.
The Marshall stuff they're lovely bits of kit. I mean, it's all about aesthetics and pretending you're a rock star, really, isn't it? But I mean, yeah, and I mean, the Marshall gear that I've come across in my life, it's as my favourite word, heft. It's hefty, it's well-made, yeah. It's good kit. I wouldn't get on with the fact that it's not proper stereo. I'm afraid I really am, as we know from various arguments.
Yes, but as you say,
you've got to put your head into it, basically,
to get that. So, but you could have, I mean, that's not what it's for. That's not the point, really. But yes, it is stereo, and they make a point of telling people that it's stereo. But yeah, I reckon that if you put your head a foot in front of it, you can tell.
I can imagine you in your caravan on your own, dancing in your pants with this thing blaring at full volume and not a care in the world. And good for you, sir.
I can't put it on full volume because I'll get complaints.
Yes, you'd undo the bolts of the caravan.
As I was saying on Tech Addicts yesterday, though, it's not about that. It's about the signature Marshall sound. And even if it's on low volume, it comes through, and the bass and the treble are just, and you've got the dials to change all that.
Yes.
I'm very happy.
Splendid. Does it go up to 11? I tell you what, I've also, very briefly, I'm going to mention some very helpful people on the group were in chatting with me about video cameras, because as a performer, I have to make a lot of what they call self-tapes, which is where, you know, in order to be considered for a job, you have to make a short recording of you pretending you're in a coffee shop enjoying a latte, for instance, whatever it is they might want you to do. So I find myself doing that quite a lot, and I do them with my phone. And the convenience is you record the thing in one room and then you go into the studio and turn on the computer, and by the time you've done that, it's all up in Dropbox ready for you to download straight into your software and edit. Job's done. So I was looking for a video camera so that I didn't have to keep using my phone, but I wanted a video camera that uploaded to the web. In the end, I gave up because such things don't seem to exist. And I think this is something that's missing from the market. I want a camera that has the quality of a proper video camera, not a phone. Sorry, Steve Litchfield. But has the processing and the afterthought of a phone. Because what I have noticed, A being the camera that I bought with my phone, is actually, on first glance, the phone images are actually better. And you look at it and you think, oh, this phone is actually filming better than the video camera, but actually it's not. You're being cheated by the fact that it's all been after-processed and looks wonderful, but when you burrow down into it, it's not. Anyway, I digress. I bought a Sony video camera. I haven't got the number in front of me, but I will do in a moment. I bought it. I could have bought a new one from Amazon for £218. It's an HDR CX240E. £218 was the asking price on Amazon new. I found one on eBay that I bought for. I took a punt and bought it for £98, and it's fine. It's arrived and it's fine and it does the job. But what I wanted to say on the show is it's like a toy. It weighs 235 grams. That's less than my phone. And this thing is meant to be a video camera. Not professional, but a real, actual video camera. It's tiny. It's light. When the box arrived, the postman gave me the box and I thought, oh, this can't be the video camera. This is way too light. This must be something else I wasn't expecting. Lo and behold, it was the video camera. I'm happy with it because I've set it up on a tripod and it's doing the job. And yes, I now have to transfer using a little SD card rather than having it conveniently beam into the cloud for me. But it's a shame. And this was going to go towards the whatever the better before that we're going to talk about later in the show. It's a shame that what 10 years ago would have been a nice, hefty, chunky, expensive, decent piece of video kit is now a tiny little bit of plastic with a couple of lenses in. It's made by Sony, so it works fine, but I'm ultimately rather disappointed. It's flimsy and it's like I've just bought a toy camera, not a real one. End of saga.
Very sad indeed, yeah. I do agree with you. It's when you compare that with what we were just saying about the Marshall, you think... Yeah,
exactly,
yes. They can still do this, but they're not doing it. Yeah. Sony are obviously in the market to try and flog stuff, and they've got to keep the price down as low as they can, I suppose.
Well, I suppose it's a yes and no, because, I mean, on the other hand, my friend who I film with, my cameraman buddy Callum, he owns a Sony video camera. It's an FS7. It's chunky, it's hefty, it's phenomenal quality, and it cost him £7,000. So, you get what you pay for, I suppose. Yeah, and in that respect, how much was your Marshall speaker?
£250.
Yeah, which for a Bluetooth speaker is a lot of money. So you get what you pay for. So, I mean, I could have paid, well over a grand and got a better camera. But it's just a shame that the lower end, as you say, they're just churning them out to make a buck and they're made of plastic fantastic and bleh.
But then you might not have been able to afford to buy one if it wasn't in that price bracket.
Yeah, there is that. There is that indeed. And as I say, it does do the job I want it to. I'm just, there's no joy in it. It's fulfilling its need, but I'm not getting any joy out of owning it.
I completely understand, and I agree with you.
I thank you, sir.
So, yeah. Anyway, link in the show notes to the Sony video camera.
Here, Ted, it's enough to make your pulse rate go up. Ha ha, see what I did there?
My next item, linked to there, is the pulse oximeter. And the reason I'm bringing this pulse oximeter to the show is because it's a bit of a still using, I guess, but I got this pulse oximeter during COVID. When I got this diagnosis of diabetes type 2, I whipped it out again. I've lost it. I hunted high and low for it, but I found it in the end. It's £14.99, and it tells you your blood oxygen level, and it gives you your pulse reading as well if you want it. And it's like one of those peg thingies they use in hospitals, and they just stick it on the end of your finger, and it works really well. The measurements are available on a Samsung or any kind of smartwatch, but then, you've got to pay £300 for this. This is £14.99, and it just does one job. We were talking about this, convergence and non-convergence recently on other podcasts. This just does one job. It sits there happily. And the good thing is that it must have been 2 to 3 years since I last needed to use this. And the same two AAA batteries still inside, good as gold, still working, and no problem at all. Whereas the Samsung Galaxy Watch, you're lucky if you get 2 days out of the battery. But yeah, convergence and divergence and all that. The pulse oximeter, I think, is well worth. And £14.99 is, you can buy them cheaper than that.
Yes.
It's just that this particular one, that's the price it was. And it just does a couple of things, but it does it reliably and well.
Hear, hear all round, and ditto all round. In fact, I also bought one during COVID, same as you, followed the same path, and then lost touch with it and hadn't seen it or used it since. And again, like you, I also have it now on my Withings watch that I got recently that I'm wearing. I've got the same thing on that, so exactly as you've just said. Out of curiosity, actually, reading your recording notes, I did get mine out. Oh, matron. And exactly like yours, it's got two AA batteries in, and I stuck them in my battery tester, and they're both up in the 90% range. So same story all round, sir.
Battery tester, that's what I need. I forgot about that. We'll come to that on the next show.
You poo-pooed it. When I brought my battery tester onto the show, you said, that's lovely, but I don't want one.
I said, no, I think what I said was I probably don't need one. But actually, having got that out of the drawer, it would have been really useful to be able to see what the figure actually was.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll come back to that. The batteries are AAAs in both of those units. And was yours more than $14.99?
I cannot remember, sir, because it was more than 10 minutes ago. I'm afraid. It must have been something similar. I remember buying it during COVID to look after myself and my mother, as I'm sure you bought yours for the similar reasons. But I can't remember. It was too long ago. Yeah, Daniel Bemis brings us an Anker Nano 30-watt USB-C charger. He says, this Anker charger is great. Great for all my devices and great for travel. It fits tight against the wall, so it won't get pulled out easily when it's plugged in. I use it as a charger, says Daniel, on my sectional sofa. I use an extension cable and put the cable under the sofa and then weave it through the gaps of the sofa. Oh, yeah, I love all those games. I do the same sort of stuff, Daniel. £15.99 for the Anker Nano USB-C charger. Looks very nice.
Yeah, very good. 30 watts as well.
30
nice
watts?
Little charger. 30 what? What? The Anker stuff is really good, as we often say on this show. And it's worth seeking out, definitely. They just seem to offer really good value for money on almost everything they make. Soundcore and Anker, really good stuff.
Indeed. Jingle time.
I wonder who bought it.
Oh, I like this, Ted. Now, I'm surprised you're still alive after this item. Do proceed.
it looks lethal, doesn't it? Somebody has used my the affiliate link, which anyone can do, tinyurl.com/AmazonTedUK. You can go and buy on Amazon in the way that you always do. And whenever you buy anything through there, I won't know who's bought what, but I will know what's been bought. And they give me a few pennies. So thank you for that. And I just to feedback once more, I tend to get about approaching £10 a month from people doing that. So thank you all for doing that. Someone bought on my affiliate link this lethal looking thing, a cordless metal blade strimmer. Now, normally strimmers have got this kind of fishing wire stuff, fishing nylon stuff coming out the bottom, haven't they? And this one has got an actual metal blade. There's no cover around it at all. It's just out there, and you think to yourself, my goodness, you would need to wear steel toe cap boots.
Goodness, I can't imagine what you do to your toes with that thing. Yes,
exactly. But it seems to me it's not really a strimmer, it's more like a grass cutter, because the pictures of people using it, that they're more using it like a lawnmower, really.
There's a picture sorry to interrupt, I can see a picture on Amazon here. Somebody's actually cutting into a tree with it.
Right, okay. So it's obviously a different kind of... It's not really a strimmer, is it? But I guess you could strim with it as well. Anyway, two lithium-ion batteries come with it, which is really good. So you can charge one while you're using the other one. And you get a load of spare blades and everything, all sorts of kind of accessories and stuff. And it's only £45. I think that's really good value for what it is. If you've got the need for it, and factor in a pair of steel cap
boots, those, yes.
So, yeah, so what do you reckon?
Well, I'm with you, Ted. I mean, it looks like a fun, in inverted commas, thing to own, but I wouldn't dare. I mean, as well as the steel-toed boots, you'd need an insurance policy and a car waiting with the engine running. Whoever you are who's bought this, please take care. This thing looks like the most lethal thing we've ever brought onto the show. I mean, I could probably make a very decent horror film with this.
Yeah, you could. Can you imagine one of these slasher flicks?
Goodness.
And someone going mad with one of these, killing everyone. But yeah, if this is you, then let us know what you bought it for and what you use it for, because I'm quite interested, and I don't think I've ever seen one before. So anyway, thank you all for using my affiliate link, tinyurl.com/AmazonTedUK.
And let us know how many toes you've got as well.
I'm still using the... Do you remember the microwave potato cooker bag?
I nearly bought one and then didn't.
I was very dubious about it when I bought it. This was in October 22, whatever works, 173. And it's basically a red bag, and you chuck a potato in it and chuck it in the microwave and it cooks it. And it's supposed to cook it in a way that is better than just putting it in or putting it in something else.
Yes.
It says that the bag is made of PVC, but it feels more like kind of cloth to me. I'm not quite sure what the material is. It's really odd. You may remember I tested this against a sock. A clean sock, I'll grant you. And the bag did definitely come out better, I seem to recall.
I presume it keeps the moisture in or something.
I don't know. I'm not sure what it does, but it seems to work, whatever the tech is. And also you get used to judging how many minutes based on your size of spuds and knowing your microwave power as to how long they need. And it works really well. In the days when I was able to eat carbohydrates and potatoes, I used it a lot. And you get two of these bags for £5.69. So it's a kind of cheap as chips as well. But it's for this purposes, it's a still using, because I am still using it. Well, I was until recently, and it worked really, really well. So I would recommend it. The microwave potato cooker bag.
You've got two of them and you're barely using one of them anymore.
Actually, mum's got the other one.
Ah,
so
shucks.
we share.
Okay, fair enough. Here, I've got one that isn't really a still using, because it's only been about two shows since I brought it on. But if you remember, I brought these fabulous double-sided cleaning cloth glasses cleaners that had a microfiber on one side and a traditional cleaning cloth on the other. And you mentioned that you'd ordered some. I wanted to ask you, did yours arrive and were you as impressed with them as I've continued to be with mine?
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but on reflection after the show in question, I looked at it and I thought to myself, I've got enough cleaning cloths. I really don't need this. I didn't order them, sorry.
Well, everyone else out there in listener land, I think they're fabulous and you should buy some. Carry on.
Yeah, I do agree with you. They do look nice. It's just that, you know, you can only buy so much stuff, can't you? Particularly stuff that's going to just end up in a drawer, because you've got stuff that does the same job anyway.
No, totally with you. I understand that. Let's play another jingle.
Don't play another jingle, because I've got a...
you're going to have a coughing fit. Okay, everybody.
Ooh.
See, there comes a point when one has to decide this is an edit point and I won't include this in the show. And we're nearly there. How are you doing, sir?
I went to the optician this week for my eyes.
I think you should have gone to the doctor, not the optician.
I've been there as well, believe me. I went to the optician for an eye test and I thought of you because they were trying to sell me a pair of glasses.
Yes.
Which were three-phase
varifocals, three-phase
varifocals. They did long distance, middle distance, and close up. Okay,
that's right. Yeah,
and they wanted £505
Ooh.
For the privilege, which did include a frame. The lenses in question were £400 without any frame.
Yeah,
and frankly, I walked away and didn't order them because I said, how am I supposed to... How can an ordinary person possibly afford to pay £500 for a pair of glasses? Tell me that. What happened to the NHS? I said, you know, this is priced out of most people's... I didn't tell them about what you said about online ordering of glasses and sending off your prescription and measuring your pupillary distance and all that. I didn't mention that. But the fact that I'm not going to go back and order them, they'll no doubt get the idea that's what's happened.
Yes.
So I need that that link again. We'll put it in the show notes to go to that online place that you use to get these glasses. But the point was, they were hard selling these to me, and they were when I said to them, I can't afford this, they said to me, well, you'll have to find a way of affording them, because you won't be able to legally drive a car or ride your scooter unless you get something organised with this. Now, the truth is that I ride my scooter without glasses on anyway, and as far as I'm concerned, I can see perfectly well. I've done my 60 feet or 20 yard eye test to myself, and I can read what I'm supposed to read. As far as the DVLA are concerned, I can see perfectly well. And if I look down at my control panel to look at what speed I'm doing, it's all perfectly clear. I just think they're going completely over the top at this optician and, you know, just trying to flog me 500 quid's worth of gear. And they'll get their comeuppance because, as we said on the last show, the trouble is, though, that they'll likely go out of business if people do what we're doing with this kind of stuff. And then you've got to go 60 miles to get an eye test. Anyway, that was a long rambling way of saying I had an eye test and I do need a slightly more strong prescription. But I'm going to go, right, yes, this is where we're rambling off to. I need that link to that place you used and we'll put it in the show notes.
Well, all I can say is what a good thing there aren't any motorcycle instructors listening to this podcast. Chris Kelly.
Excuse me, I've got a cough.
Well, I've done my 20-yard test. As far as I'm concerned, if I can do that test, the DVLA will be happy with me driving with no glasses.
Yeah. No, I do sympathise with you, Ted, even though it's got nothing to do with still using.
No, that was your fault. You meandered off that way.
I'll let you have the link. Right, let's play another jingle and move on.
You know, I was telling you about this Puckator mug that you were supposed to be finding me to replace the one I broke.
I kindly found you some links which I passed on to you. Yes.
Yeah. Well, in the end, I couldn't find one. Those links that you gave me, like, months and months and months ago.
Yeah.
I tried to follow them up, and then I searched on Google for Puckator mugs, China mugs and all that, and the exact one that I had, I couldn't find anywhere. So, in the end, on my newfound walking regime, I walked round to a local shop. This is called the Original Factory Shop, and I'd never heard of it, until I came up here. But it's like one of these. Well, it's like a enhanced pound shop almost.
Right.
Everything is not a pound, but it's like when you go in there, you're not really sure what stock they'll have of what. And I looked it up online. I'll put a link in the show notes.
A bit like the sort of B&M shop or Dunelm or one of these places that sort of sells a bit of everything.
I don't know either of those, okay. I'm afraid. But yeah, you probably get the idea. So I don't know. I'll put a link in the show notes to the map that they've got on their website of how many shops there are, and there's tons of them all over the place. And so I don't quite know how they've passed me by. Anyway, going back to the mug, I found in the Original Factory Shop round the corner this really nice looking mug. It's not quite the same thing. It's not China. It's made of what's it called? Porcelain. Is it?
Yes.
Is that the right word?
Yes, it looks right from the picture.
Okay. And it's really nice. I quite like it. It's not quite the same thing. I do like a China mug because I'm a bit posh like that. But it's really nice, nicely designed, nicely made, and it's got a wide base so it won't get knocked over. And it's blue and green and turquoise, and I like it.
Do you know what? I actually like it very much. In fact, I think it's nicer than the mug what you broke, to be honest with you. I think that's a very nice mug. And I tell you what, Ted, you get my thumbs up simply for going into a real physical shop and buying it in person.
Vive la
good old days. Interesting that you know, I'd never heard of the Original Factory Shop. But then, as you just say, you'd never heard of Dunelm or B&M. So,
no.
But it looks like a very similar, for the listeners out there, I did look up the Original Factory Shop and it does appear to me to be the same kettle of fish as Dunelm and B&M. But I'd also discovered that my nearest is 24 miles away in Loughton. So I won't be able to walk around the corner to mine. But no, good shout, Ted. And it's a very nice mug. As I say, I think it's a very attractive mug and nicer than the old one anyway.
Yeah, they're £4 each, incidentally, which is, you know, cheap as chips as well. So it's a big cheap as chips kind of show today, isn't it?
It is indeed, and I'm bringing you, this will be a quick one, Tippex. Oh, my Lord, I needed some Tippex recently. Yes, I still use it. I'm 59 years old, thank you. And we hadn't got any, and we'd run out, and I said to my mother, do we have no Tippex in the house? This is shocking. This cannot be. And I jumped onto our favourite website, and for £2.75 the next day, I was the proud owner of a little pot of Tippex. Do you remember Tippex? That sort of white fluid that you used to brush on, usually when you typed. I mean, it was in the good old days when you used to type things. You'd use it to mask out mistakes when you're typing. It was just a white fluid, like white paint, and you could erase mistakes on paper. And I use it for other things these days. I use it if anything is white and has marks on it, for instance. I mean, if you've got a white wall and it's got a dirty mark on it and you don't want to actually open a tin of paint, then get the Tippex out. It's just as good.
Yeah.
Yes, I bought some Tippex and it was £2.75 and I felt very reminisced. I enjoyed that. That's it.
I remember when the Tippex started to bring out the little bits of paper instead of the fluid.
Oh, yes.
And you stuck the bit of paper behind in the typewriter.
Yes,
and
yes.
Then typed over the...
Yes.
And it was quite amazing because the action of the arm going up and hitting this paper, it exactly matched
yes.
where the... And that made the whole blowing on it and drying the fluid out the window. You could just carry on straight away.
Yes.
Yeah.
That did certainly appeal to my OCD sense of perfectionism, that you could, as you say, you could absolutely... to millimetre specific, you know, tenth of a millimetre specific, exactly cover the error. Yeah,
yeah,
I enjoyed that too.
So yeah, Tippex. I've not seen any for years. I never thought about using it for those for other purposes though. So that's a good shout. That's a good DIY tape, in fact.
Indeed, anything that's white, walls, shoes, radiators, picture frames. You know, anything that's got a little mark on it and you either don't have the right application for it or you don't want to open a tin of paint, Tippex is your friend.
Very good indeed. Right, last one for this section is the garlic press rocker. We've spoken about garlic crushing implements in the past, but this one is actually quite good because it's a rocker. It's a mincer and a rocker and a crusher. £6.99 from our favourite shop. You can get it in black, green or yellow. It's made of food-grade stainless steel, dishwasher safe, and it's very elder-friendly because it's got a big grip handle in the middle of it, and so it's really easy to grip onto. So if you want to get your garlic crushed, then it works really well. You roll it over. You peel the garlic bulb and you roll it over, and it just goes up through the holes in the bottom. It kind of minces it through the holes, and there's also a hammer on the end of it. So if you want to batter it with a hammer first, you can. And also, for some bizarre reason, there's a bottle opener in it as well. I can't imagine why they've decided to put why not a screwdriver? Or why not?
So it's really, it's a mafia tool for garlic. I mean, batter it to death and then run it over.
Exactly. And it's a Swiss Army knife as well.
Oh, I love it. I want one of those, Ted.
I want one of those.
Oh, do you see what I did there? Oh, my God, he's on fire today. Listen, actually, the funny thing is, as I've often said lately in this section, I really don't want one of these. And I have no idea what I'd do with it if I owned one. I just love the idea of owning a handheld airport-style metal detector.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, our favourite store is selling them for £21.99. And I just like the idea of going up to my friends and saying, lift your arms up. And then waving this thing around them and saying, yes, okay, you're clear. I mean, as I say, utterly, utterly no needs. It's not even as if I worked in an environment where it could be a useful thing to have for safety. No, I have no idea what I'd do with it, but I want one anyway. A handheld airport-style metal detector. Maybe it's just because it'll make me feel important.
I wonder who would, you know, all joking aside, I wonder who would buy such a thing. Because if you ran an airport or you ran somewhere, you know, a business, you'd have a professional tool, not a 21 quid Amazon special. So I wonder who it is that would buy it. Maybe it's just a complete novelty that they're expecting people to get people for Christmas.
Yeah, probably idiots like me who just say, I want one. But I suppose if you're running, small local groups, even the kind of group my mother belongs to, I mean, maybe not that age group, but, you know, groups of local, what do they call it? The working man's club, etc. You might want to have some guy on the door that just, you know, doesn't want people coming in with knives. I don't know. I'm just trying to think on my feet here, Ted. There probably are people who could use them.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. But, Yes. Okay, then. $21.99, and he wants one of those.
I don't really.
I tell you what, I've been eyeing up for a long time now, probably into years now, is a Kindle Scribe. Now, I know what you think about Kindles, and you want to read proper books and all that, but the Kindle Scribe is a kind of cut above this, I think,
right.
Because it's more like, in actual fact, the thing that you brought to the show some time back. That, do you remember that e-scribble pad you bought? Are you still using that?
Yes, I now and again. Once now in again, a blue yeah. moon, yes. When I remember.
Yeah, exactly. But this Kindle Scribe, it's not cheap. It's expensive, which is why it's in I Want One of Those. £409
Ooh,
for the top model. But they've evolved it over time, and they've made it more clever. And you can use it as a scribble pad. It's also a 10-inch size, so it's bigger than any Kindle has ever been before it.
Right.
But it looks really nicely made and really nicely finished and classy. And as I say, they keep adding features to it. When it first came out, you think, good grief, what a load of rubbish. They haven't thought about this at all. But they add features, and it's actually... Anyway, I haven't jumped at one yet because of the price mainly, but I really fancy one. I want one of those, definitely. And I might even order one and borrow it from Amazon. and you can get a cheaper model. There's a £329 model that's got less storage and a not-so-clever pen. The pen, the premium pen, has got an eraser on the other end, but you can buy the cheaper pen. But I just fancy, you know, having a notepad by my side. I know I can do that with other things. I've got a Galaxy tablet with a stylus, but this is about a paper-like experience, mm-hmm. and I just fancy it. That's all.
I think it's very nice. And you do me wrong, sir. I have every respect for people who want to read on a Kindle. It's simply my own personal preference to read, you know, traditional books. But I have nothing against Kindles at all. And I mean, and to my mother's shame, I don't read anyway. I've always said that I'm too hyperactive. I'm too full of myself to read. But in my dotage, I will take up reading. And of course, by then, who knows? We'll probably just plug something into our brain and think the book. So sooner or later, you know, in some year's time, I will very possibly be buying whatever the latest iteration is by then. But no, I like this. And I love the fact that it's also a jotter. So presumably you can be reading your book and you can probably make all sorts of marginalia notes all over the book while you're reading it, which for my mother would be very useful.
You can, but you can also now, since it's evolved, you can ignore the Kindle bit and the books bit. You can just use it as a notepad and use it to save online or wherever you want to save stuff to. You can save it to wherever you want, or you can email stuff to yourself with it. I just fancy one. And if I, as I say, if the price was right, I would have one by now and I'd be playing with it. And like you, probably it would end up in a drawer.
Better
before.
When I say like you, I didn't mean that you would end up in a drawer. I meant like your e-ink pad that end up in a drawer. Matthew Jones. He's got a better before. He popped up on our MeWe group and said he wants to talk about hobbies. Are we doing them wrong now? Hobbies are an essential part of what makes us us, he says. The most rewarding part of my hobbies has been starting out with a limited crap equipment base, poor knowledge, poor practice, and gradually working my way up, improving all those things. Now, newbies speak as if they have the theoretical knowledge that someone of my era would have taken a decade to accumulate through trial, error, and painstaking research. Thanks to the internet, they have accumulated their knowledge in weeks or even hours. With all the info at their fingertips, combined with expert reviews and opinion, of course, on YouTube, they didn't have actual hands-on experience with the equipment, though. They didn't have slow learning. They didn't save the money up and make careful choices about what to buy. Gambles in my day, says Matthew, were often taken and lost. Now you can just spend an afternoon establishing the best equipment on YouTube and put it on a credit card and just get it. So these things aren't about the destination, he concludes. They're about the journey. And I completely agree. I responded to him in this group largely based on my experience in the 1980s and 90s and 70s to some degree about making myself some sort of kind of pseudo expert on photography and cameras, particularly camera hardware. And by the end of that, I used to buy every single photography magazine that was published, every week, every month, all of them. And I read them cover to cover. And I was absolutely, I considered myself to be an expert on cameras at the time. And you just had to go through that, ordering reviews from amateur photographer and getting stuff in. And there was no internet to just go and download it from, or going to the library and reading, looking things up. I completely agree with Matthew here, and I'm sure that you do too.
I do so. It was a very interesting conversation, and I don't recall a discerning voice in that whole conversation. Everyone was agreeing that indeed it's about the journey, not the destination. And the example I gave was in my business, which may surprise some people to hear that, excuse me, I actually, as a creative person, as a person who creates music and videos and audio, I much preferred the old days because exactly as you just said, you had to go through a process. If you wanted to record, for instance, a pop single, you had to go through the process of working on it, preparing it, finding a studio, saving up the money, paying for the studio. The recording day was a very, very big deal and everyone was on tenterhooks and you had to get it done within the time, and necessity is the mother of invention, and you came away with a product that you were proud of. Even if it was rubbish, you'd achieved something and that was your studio day. Now, every teenager in the world can just record studio quality on their phones and their laptops in their bedroom at the drop of a hat. And where's the joy in that? Where's the learning? Where's the process in that? Exactly, Ted. I concur wholeheartedly. Come back 1980, as I said in the group. All is forgiven.
Yeah, and you learn transferable skills as well that are just not designed for that particular one thing. It's just a whole different ball game now, isn't it? You can just and I do it myself. If I'm looking to buy a new phone now or a new Zoom recorder or whatever, the first thing you do is go to YouTube.
Yes.
And within an hour at most, you kind of got people's take on it, and you think you know what it's all about. But no, back in the day, we did it the hard way. And I suppose a youngster would say, well, it's much easier and better now because you can learn things really quickly. Why would you want to do all that background? But I agree with Matthew.
I think it's the same. It moves into things like this awful, 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 thrice, four times awful X Factor in Britain's Got Talent, where somebody can be working on a Tesco checkout one day and be a pop star the next. Whereas you go back into the old days, the Elton Johns and the Cliff Richards and the Queens of the world had to carry amplifiers up heavy flights of stairs and do gigs in front of three people and work for years and learn their craft and move up the ladder slowly. And they're the real stars, not the idiots who win talent shows. Anyway, indeed, I think we all agree.
Except that the idiots that win talent shows, that they will argue that, well, I didn't need to do all that crap. I've got there quickly and I've got pots of money, thank you.
Yeah, but what you don't hear is the stories about the idiots who then go on to star in a West End musical or do a series of pop concerts, and they haven't got the stamina, they haven't got the ability, they don't understand how it works, they get hit on the head by scenery because they don't know that that's where scenery comes from. They haven't studied. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Transferable skills and experience.
I always used to say, if they had a competition called Britain's Got Electricians and somebody won, would you let them wire your house? No, you would not.
Yes. Anyway, I think we're all agreeing with that one, Matthew. So thank you for raising it. And it's a very good point. In fact, let's move now into another zone with Matthew. Matthew Jones is back again with magnets. He wants to put magnets into room 101. While I really do appreciate that magnets are useful, and things like fitting cases, chargers, turning on screens when you open cases, back to that Kindle thing again, I found myself picking up all sorts of small metal crap every time I pick up my phone. Little bits and pieces, the odd coin, cheap jewellery. The most annoying SIM, the most annoying one is a SIM card ejector tool, which he picks up all the time. I also picked up one of my wife's earring backs, and he happened to notice at the time. Over the years, I've lost loads of small metal parts, and I reckon these have been the chief suspect has been that they've stuck to my phone, then fallen off or something. Now, I said to him that no, all the pictures he was putting on the group were of an iPhone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I said to he tried it with a non-iPhone, and this, he reckons the same thing happened. I tried it with my phones, and I couldn't make it. I'm going to do it now. Live test. I've put a SIM card tool down on the table. I've taken my... Yeah, it did pick it up, you're right. But it's only right on one end of it, presumably where the NFC is or something, or or maybe it's a speaker. But almost everywhere else. I tried this the other day and I couldn't make it do it. But yeah, live test on the show. Can you do a live test on the show too?
I haven't got anything to pick it up with. I've got my phone in my hand, but I can't find anything metal. Oh, hang on, here's a pair of scissors. No, I've never... I'm slowly moving these scissors around the phone and nothing seems to want to hold it anywhere. I've never encountered this in my life. I mean, no. I'm hardly an expert on mobile phones, as we all know. But I've never heard of or encountered this before.
Yeah, well, obviously Matthew has, so he's annoyed and wants to put magnets into room 101. I'm not putting magnets in room 101 because they're also very, very useful for everything else, as he points out. But let us know what you think, dear listener. And the last thing I want to put into room 101 is stupid people panic buying before and during bank holiday weekend. When actually, if they check the opening times, which anyone can do online now, they would see that our local shops, our supermarkets, they're not closed any of the days. And yet, the evening before the bank holiday weekend starts, you cannot move in Tesco or in Sainsbury's. Really, really annoying that, you know, you're packed in like sardines. I suppose I should just avoid the day. While I'm on the topic, people dawdling around, blocking people's pathways with no apparent awareness. We've done this before, haven't we?
Oh, we
with
have,
no apparent
yes, yes.
awareness of the social space or demands of other people around you. They've got no spatial awareness, and they're just rude, and they walk into you or block your path, or, you know, people are just, they go into some other mode, I think. But we won't dwell on too much.
No, but I agree with you. This is one of my major grumpy old man whinges, that people, you know, getting to the top of an escalator and stopping and forgetting that other people are following up behind and can't stop.
Yeah.
Yes, all that sort of stuff, yeah, really, really does get on my goat. Hear, hear.
Yes, indeed. John Tanza is...
I was just thinking that's the first time we haven't gone... Oh, now we have. Okay, carry on. John Tanza, yes.
John Tanza has been using Moneybox, which is an app, a financial services app. I looked up on my PC the highest rate available for a cash ISA. They pay 5.1%. Having said that, I would sign up. The PC showed a QR code to download their app onto my phone.
Right.
I opened the account using the phone, and then they transferred me to the app for my work for my bank to make the transfer to the ISA. All absolutely seamless, which is the point that John's making, and to me, the basic example of how a well-written digital application can give real financial advantage. So there's that.
Thank you, John.
And the last thing is Wayfair. Wayfair is a shop which you probably will tell me you know about Wayfair, will you?
No, I've never heard of Wayfair. Sorry about that, sir.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I think it's more like a northern thing than a southern thing. But I've no idea where the nearest shop is. But what I was going to give them a gold star for was that I ordered something from them for the second time, no, third time, and their ordering online is so slick and efficient, even over bank holiday weekends. Not this time because it's not finished yet, but like previously it was. And it's almost like Amazon style in terms of delivery dates and efficiency and emails. They actually use Evri, which is the old Hermes.
Oh, yes,
but
yes.
They're very reliable, really good information exchange, and they just keep you informed. And it's, Wayfair is one of these kind of, they kind of, if you do most things, if you look at their shop. I see you've clicked on the link there. Can you see what they do?
I haven't clicked on the link, no. I have nothing open.
Oh, I thought you had. Right, well, I'll take that back and I'll click on it myself and give you a... Right, garden furniture,
yes.
Kettles,
yeah.
Kitchenware, sofas, umbrellas, lots of outdoor stuff. But, yeah. Anyway, Wayfair get a gold star from me for being so incredibly efficient in the ordering and delivering process. That's all. Okay,
I think we're there.
How long have we been talking? Oh, look, it's nearly an hour.
Nearly an hour, sir. We're good at this.
We certainly are. We'll be back in 3 weeks' time, if all goes to plan. And don't forget that we can be tracked down on our website, which is whateverworks.works. You can track down Aidan at aidanbell.com and me at tedsalmon.com, where you will find links to all the audio podcasts, all the MeWe groups, all the stuff we do, and serve up to you to relieve your boredom when you're doing 8,000 steps when you don't want to. And the last shout out, of course, for the MeWe group. Do let us know in the MeWe group whatever works in your life. We'll bring highlights of that to the shows forthcoming. And keep in touch. Yes, indeed. Last word to you.
Do you know what's occurred to me today? The original factory shop and Wayfair I'd never heard of. Dunelm Milne you'd never heard of. B&M you'd never heard of. There are shops out there, ladies and gentlemen. Let's try and put Amazon to one side for 10 minutes and go shopping.
Yes, indeed. Okay, that's it. We're done. So, join us in the MeWe group. One last thing to say, as always, don't forget...
Whatever works, works!